It's been a lot of fun watching this series, but also a bit depressing. And it really hit me watching this latest installment of The Last Ride, just how much Undertaker is a lot like Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler. Remember The Wrestler many years ago? A lot of wrestlers said that it wasn't really an accurate depiction of older professional wrestlers. Well, that's not what really happens. And a lot of guys said, actually, it's a pretty accurate representation of what a lot of guys go through when they get to a certain stage of their career. And they get to a certain age, they're washed up, or they're over the hill, or they're past their peak, they just can't go anymore. And now they're sitting in empty buildings, you know, at an autograph table where nobody's coming by. Undertaker's not quite at that point yet, and probably will never be just because of the elite level that he, you know, he's at. I don't think you'll ever see the Undertaker sitting at an autograph signing with nobody, coming by to sign, or wanting an autograph or a photo from him. But it reminded me of The Wrestler in that instead of getting paid $100 to wrestle in front of 50 people at a flea market somewhere, Undertaker is paid a king's ransom to wrestle in front of 50,000 people in Saudi Arabia. But Randy the Ram didn't know when to quit, and neither does Mark Calloway. And that's the key similarity there. Just didn't know when to quit. He's chasing a storybook ending that no longer exists. He's had a few matches in the last 5 years, or even going back longer than 5 years. You want to go back 6, 7, 8 years, WrestleMania matches. He's had matches where he could have had that storybook ending by his own admission. Oh, I wish I could have retired then. I wish I would have stepped away after that. I wish I would have stepped away at that point. He acknowledges this. He had multiple opportunities to walk away at a time when it would have been a fairy tale type ending for the Undertaker character, and yet he came back each and every time. He came back anyway, and that seems to be the enduring story of this series. This is your Undertaker The Last Ride review for Chapter 4, The Battle Within. We have one episode left to go after this until the end of the series, which I will miss because I've enjoyed watching this. It's a side of him that we never thought we'd be able to see. And one of the coolest parts of this series has been the ability to look back at some of those classic, not even matches so much, but segments and moments that you remember The Undertaker from years ago, like shortly after he debuted. We're talking 1991, 1992, 1995. Being able to see him in whether it's an outtake from a segment or him, you know, goofing around with people on set. One of the cool things about this series is we've been able to see footage that has never been shown publicly before. And I love that kind of stuff. So whether it was Undertaker in a shop, you know, sanding a casket for Kamala, which they showed here in this special, or whether it's The Undertaker at a cemetery somewhere cutting a promo on Mankind. They have collected some of this footage to show us here in this series. And then, of course, the promo ends and you hear cut. You know, the director yells cut. There's Bruce Prichard, who usually directed a lot of those segments, a lot of the remotes off-site Bruce Prichard was involved in, because he's been with the company forever. You know, going all the way back, even before Undertaker came into the company. Bruce Prichard has been there working in that company. And Prichard was interviewed here, and he talked about how he had gone out and bought books on death. He bought books on old Undertakers to kind of work with Mark and have him try to work some of that into the character. They really wanted to read up on all this stuff. And so that was kind of fascinating to listen to him talk about that. On this particular episode, they also included a little bit of footage. Not a lot. It was... You know, one scene, a couple of comments from Paul Bearer from an interview they conducted with him back in 2012. That was only about a year before he died. I don't know when the interview was done, but the year following that, in March of 2013, about a month before WrestleMania, is when he had a heart attack and passed away. And in the clip, he just talked about how when he and The Undertaker used to work together back in those days, they were thick as thieves. Everywhere one guy would go, the other guy would go. They were inseparable. They worked together. They traveled together. And Undertaker was always in character. He never broke. He was always in character all the time. He was wearing black. He wouldn't talk much. Wasn't making personal appearances. He wasn't, you know, if he was invited, they showed a clip here from the old Regis and Kathy Lee show. If he was on a show like that, you know, the hair was covering the face. He wouldn't say much. Paul Bearer would do most of the talking. He was committed to that role. And even over the years, his wrestlers would try to get him to break. They would try to get him to crack. JBL, Booker T wanting him to do an Undertaker Rooney. Kurt Angle planning a kiss on him in the ring and running away. He would barely sell it. He might crack a smile, but that's about all you would get out of the guy. You couldn't break him, at least not on camera. But this all led into a discussion about Undertaker now beginning to work with a social media group, something that even a few years ago would have been unfathomable, that the Undertaker would link up with some social media group and he would open up a Twitter and he would open up an Instagram. I remember Mick Foley once saying, I don't ever want to live in a world where the Undertaker is on Twitter. Well, and the funny thing is now Undertaker is on Twitter, and as I'm recording this, Mick Foley has closed, for now anyway, he's temporarily closed his Twitter. So Mick Foley is off Twitter and the Undertaker is on Twitter. It's like some kind of weird, bizarro world now that we're living in. But again, it was something that even a few years ago would have been unheard of, but Undertaker talked about the fact that, you know what, got to a point in my life where I felt like it was about time that I cashed in on some of those chips that I wasn't able to cash in on for all these years because I was so protective of the character. So you didn't see me going out there doing meet and greets, especially things that were not affiliated with WWE, making personal appearances, doing Q&As. Just wasn't something that he felt he should be doing or that he felt he, you know, could do because it would harm the character in some way. And so finally he reached the point where he said, I think it's time. So he signed up with this company called Get Engaged, and they got him on social media. They got him to start promoting different products, meal prep plans, and things of that nature, booking him for meet and greets and autograph signings. Again, independent of WWE. This had nothing to do with WWE. This company was working with Mark Calloway to get some of these gigs booked for him. And if you're wondering, well, how could they do that? Because isn't he under contract to WWE? Well, that's where the story gets a little murky. Because at the time, I don't believe that he was under contract to WWE. My understanding of the story at the time was his contract, whatever kind of contract he had with WWE, had expired and was not renewed, or they hadn't yet signed the new deal. It was kind of this gray area. And I was hoping they would go into this. I said at the beginning of the series, I really hope they get into this at some point, because this happened right in that period where they were filming. They've been filming this for 3 years. And in fact, they did cover it here in this episode, briefly, but they did cover it, which was the Starcade, or Starcast, I should say, the Starcast fiasco from last year, where he was booked for a signing at StarCast 2 in Las Vegas. Conrad Thompson ran the StarCast convention. This was his second one. Independent of AEW. I know some people think that it was practically an AEW event. They did piggyback off the Double or Nothing event in Vegas last year. There was AEW talent, a lot of AEW talent at the event. Conrad has a relationship, obviously, with those in power in AEW, but it was not an AEW event. This was his event. He booked the talent for it. He put the work in to try to get some of these big names. And one of those names he was able to get was The Undertaker. He even put down a deposit before he made the announcement. And Undertaker talked here, and he claimed in this documentary that he knew nothing about the nature of the event. He just thought, well, I have a booking. I've been signed to go do an autograph signing. He didn't know that it had any kind of affiliation or was part of some big wrestling weekend with another wrestling company. He never named AEW. AEW was never mentioned by name, but obviously that's who he was referring to. So again, Conrad, he booked The Undertaker, and he had put down a deposit. He had made the announcement. It caused this huge stir. Oh my God, Undertaker is appearing at this event. Double or Nothing weekend in Vegas. There's going to be AEW talent there. This is huge. you know, it's rare enough for him to be doing something like this, but with the AEW connection, everybody was losing their mind. And, you know, there's a certain perception that goes along with that. Even though he has nothing to do with AEW, the perception is, well, he's, you know, kind of cavorting around with AEW, or maybe AEW will have him do an appearance or something at Double or Nothing, which was never going to happen. But the fact is, WWE, you know, got wind of it, and they weren't very happy about it. Plain and simple. The people in WWE were not happy. I guess they were blindsided. They didn't know it was coming, and they have no obligation to know that it was coming. If Undertaker was not under contract to them at the time, then Undertaker isn't obligated to say a fucking word if he doesn't want to. And look, I look at this situation here, and Undertaker has made appearances over the years, I'm sure, at fan access and stuff like that. It's not like he never does an autograph signing. But those are events that WWE hosts, or those are events that the WWE makes money off of. And so here's a situation. Undertaker now is going to be making money off somebody else. Yeah, that's going to piss off WWE. The way I look at it, if the guy isn't under contract, though, well, you know, hey. Go fly a kite. The man's allowed to go out and make whatever deals he wants to make and make money for himself if that's what he wants to do. Unless he has a contract that prevents him from doing that. Too bad. Now, Conrad had also made the announcement that Kurt Angle was going to be at StarCast. This is coming off a WrestleMania match that Kurt Angle had with Baron Corbin, where Baron Corbin retired him, so he had been working for WWE as well. And none of this sat well with Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon was furious when he found out about this. He called The Undertaker. He said that, well, it looked like you're going somewhere else. It looks like you're going elsewhere. And Undertaker's like, where am I going? At this stage of my career, I'm going to go sign with somebody else. I'm going to stab Vince McMahon in the back and not tell him. Even if I was interested in something like this, I'm going to go sign with another company at 55 years old or whatever he was. It's ridiculous. Wouldn't be able to call himself The Undertaker anyway. Why would he leave? What reason does The Undertaker have to go anywhere else? Vince was not happy. Now, again, if I remember my timeline correctly, this was around the time his contract was said to have expired. And that's really the reason why he started doing these outside bookings in the first place. And Vince McMahon was angry. In the end, he got Undertaker to pull out, Kurt Angle to pull out. So two huge losses that Conrad took on that event. I mean, those were two big signings, and they both pulled out. And Angle, I believe right after that, Kurt Angle signed a 5-year deal with WWE. Surprise, surprise. So they locked him into a 5-year deal. And, you know, it just goes to show you how little the talent is actually protected by these contracts. So this was about a year ago, right? About a little over a year ago now. And Kurt Angle said, oh, I signed the new 5-year deal with WWE. And then a year later, maybe to the day, this was April of last year, April of this year, Kurt Angle is fired by WWE. He is released as part of all the COVID cuts and everything from back in April. And it just goes to show you, you know, if you are locked into a contract with WWE, you can't go to WWE and say, you know what, this isn't working for me anymore. I think I'm going to break this contract. I'm going to go somewhere else. Uh-uh. That's not the way it works. But if WWE signs you to a 5-year contract, I mean, shit, they could sign you to a 15-year contract like they did with The Undertaker, which I'll get to. And 6 months later, they could say, yeah, you know what, we're going to let you go. Sorry. They did the same thing with Anderson and Gallows. Anderson and Gallows were swept up in those cuts back in April. They had just signed new 5-year deals in September. Less than a year later, gone, fired, out of a job. Sorry. So it just goes to show you where the power really lies. And it ain't Hulkamania. So much for job security, I guess. But Undertaker admits that this led to a falling out. He and Vince McMahon, I don't know if they had a shouting match or what happened, but there was a falling out over this whole StarCast situation. And he and Vince didn't speak to each other for a while. Now, it couldn't have gone on for too long because a couple months later, he was backstage hobnobbing with everybody at WrestleMania. So in that period of a month and a half or 2 months, however long it was, obviously they kissed and made up. But Undertaker signed a new deal just like Kurt Angle did. Kurt signed a 5-year deal. Undertaker, and this was never officially announced, but the belief is that Undertaker signed a new 15-year contract to stay with WWE, which, if that's true, would take him to 69, maybe, or around 70. He'll be around 70 years old when this contract is over. So I think it's safe to say it's basically a lifetime deal with WWE. Undertaker's not going anywhere. And Undertaker will not be appearing at StarCast or any kind of similar event, not unless WWE hosts it themselves. I always wondered, why doesn't WWE just, if they really wanted to put these different conventions out of business, if it really annoyed them that much and they wanted to put these guys out, then why not just go ahead and host one on your own? Why not go ahead and just, you know, we're going to put together this giant wrestling convention. We're going to invite all of these legends. I'm not talking fan access. I'm talking like really blowing this out. But just take the lead and host it on your own and get a piece of the action. You can invite some of the local independent promotions. I mean, if they really wanted to, they could just put these guys out in 2 seconds because they have the money to do it. They can shut them out from booking some of the bigger halls or the ballrooms at certain hotels and just kind of take it in-house and do it on their own. But yes, it's safe to say that Undertaker will not be doing an event like that. And look, outside of WrestleMania, right? Outside of WrestleMania, the Undertaker character arguably would be Vince McMahon's greatest creation. Would it not? So you can understand why Vince would be so protective of that Undertaker character. And when he hears something like that, yeah, it's understandable that it would bother him. Again, the guy's allowed to go out and make a living for himself if that's what he wants to do. But yes, you can understand why Vince McMahon would be upset about that. For him to take such offense, though, and have a falling out to me is a little ridiculous. But good on The Undertaker. Good on The Undertaker for cashing in and getting that fat new contract that he got out of it. I don't think he did that as a negotiating ploy, but it sounds like he got himself a hell of a deal. Good for him. The man should be able to make his money. Vince McMahon is a billionaire. Let him pay up. So WrestleMania 35 was the first WrestleMania since WrestleMania 2000 not to feature an Undertaker match on the card. He had a long stretch there with no major injuries that kept him out. If you remember WrestleMania 2000, he was going to be on the show. He had already been out for a few months. I think he had a hip injury or he had a hip operation of some kind. And this was back in 1999. Talk about the hip surgeries he's had in the last 10 years. This is going back to the last century, the last millennium. So he had some kind of hip issue. He was going to come back, I think, around January, maybe Royal Rumble time. And then he tore his pec. I think he was in training. He was at the gym, freak accident, tore his pec. And that delayed his return by a few more months. That's when he came back as the American Badass. But, you know, it begs the question, had he come back when he was originally going to come back, I'm sure he would have been on the WrestleMania 2000 card. Would he have been the American Badass? Or would he have just come back as the Dead Man? At what point did he make the decision, we have to freshen things up, let's go for the biker look, let's get the motorcycle? I don't know. I don't know if that came after he tore the pec or if that was already the plan that was in place going into January. But, there's a lot of what-ifs. There's a lot of what-ifs when it comes to what would have happened if Undertaker was on that WrestleMania card. I mean, nobody knows for sure. My best guess is they would not have called on Mick Foley to come back so soon after he retired in the Hell in a Cell match with Triple H. Undertaker probably would have had, I mean, if they wanted to do a McMahon in every corner, instead of calling the guy that just retired, Undertaker probably would have been in one of those corners. We may have had Linda McMahon in the Undertaker's corner at WrestleMania. If that's the case and Undertaker is in that fatal four-way, the streak is over because Undertaker's not winning that match. So it's just interesting to ponder. He said he was okay with not being on the card at WrestleMania last year. Clearly, that was a lie. He may have believed that coming into the show, but once you see him in the back and he's, you know, everyone's getting ready to go out there and he's in the gorilla position, he just looks like, he looks like the kid in dodgeball who didn't get picked. He looked like the saddest man in the world. So clearly he was not okay with not having a match at WrestleMania. I do wonder, though, I wonder if him not being on that show could have been tied into the StarCast situation. Because it was, again, all of this was happening around that time when he signed to do StarCast and they made the announcement. I mean, that was right around the time they would have had to make a decision. Are we doing a match with The Undertaker or not? So it would not surprise me at all if Vince McMahon was so pissed off that they weren't on speaking terms, right, for at least a few weeks. Vince McMahon said, well, no WrestleMania match. And that's why The Undertaker didn't have a match at WrestleMania 35. Why else would he not have a match? I mean, they talked a little bit later on about maybe he thought maybe wanting to save him because they knew they were going to use him in Saudi Arabia in June against Goldberg. But even still, didn't miss a WrestleMania since 2000. He was there. He wasn't hurt. Well, I mean, he's always hurt, but he didn't have a major injury. I don't know. But by the time he got to MetLife Stadium, obviously they had patched things up and they were, kind of joking with each other. And instead, Vince McMahon pitched him instead on a segment with Elias on Raw the next night. Undertaker said, I guess that's my WrestleMania. And he rolled his eyes. He was thrilled. He said, I should be in the ring at WrestleMania. I shouldn't be doing a segment on TV the next night at Barclays Center. He didn't seem too happy about that, but he didn't have his gear. Vince McMahon said, you don't have your gear. It's like, no, I didn't bring it with me. So this guy, and it can't be easy for him to be flying around all the time, right? Big as he is, beat up as he is. He had flown to New York. He was there. He had to get on a plane and go back to Texas to get his gear, get back on the plane, and fly back to New York. Seems a little ridiculous to me. But we got a scene in the back of WrestleMania with Vince and The Undertaker, and Vince McMahon is joking with him. He goes, you know, a pro always brings their gear. And Undertaker, who again, you could tell was upset that he didn't have a WrestleMania match. He burned him right back. He goes, well, a pro would have booked me on the card. Vince McMahon didn't have an answer for that. He didn't have a comeback for that. I'm telling you, he totally got left off that WrestleMania card last year because of the StarCast stuff. Now I'm convinced of it. And you know they're petty enough to have done that. If they weren't on speaking terms and they were pissed at each other or Vince was pissed at him, you know he would have done something like that. You know it. That'll show him. We'll leave him off the card. They do cover the Super Showdown disaster with Bill Goldberg, who was not interviewed for the documentary. I was disappointed by that. I think it would have been interesting to hear from him backstage after that match, although I guess he was concussed. He was hurt, so that might explain why. But I was hoping we would get some more insight into really what Undertaker thought about. He acknowledged, look, Goldberg got hurt, but he had to be pissed. I wonder if any of that anger was directed towards Goldberg. I don't know. Even when Goldberg came out for that match, he was already bleeding. He had headbutted the door. Maybe he concussed himself long before he ran himself into the ring post. Would have been nice to get a little more perspective on Undertaker's thoughts about Bill. Maybe get some comments at some point from Goldberg. The only good thing about that match in Saudi Arabia was the Undertaker's entrance. The Undertaker's entrance at that Super Showdown show was one of the coolest Undertaker entrances that I've ever seen. They had the Druids with the torches, Undertaker is rising up from hell. I thought that was one of his very best entrances. Not his best, but I think it's up there. You know, and people don't remember it. They remember how awful the match ended. But that entrance was the best part about that whole thing. On paper, you could see why they would have wanted to do that match. When are we ever going to have another opportunity to have the Undertaker go one-on-one against Bill Goldberg? These guys are at a point in their careers where we're not going to get this chance again. Saudi Arabia, they want a big match. On paper, it looked great. Two legends who had never worked together before outside of Undertaker eliminated him at the Royal Rumble, I think, a couple of years earlier. So they had a little bit of an interaction, but they never had a match. So it's the two, and the way they positioned it is, it's the two guys who kind of led the way for their respective promotions during the Monday Night War. Goldberg was leading the charge in WCW, and The Undertaker was leading the charge in WWE. Yeah, he was one of them. He was definitely one of the stars who was leading the team. He was a loyal soldier. I think of Austin and Rock and them before I think of Undertaker. But yes, Undertaker was on the other team. Goldberg was on the other team. And now we get to see them face off all these years later. Triple H was the one who had called to pitch Undertaker on the idea. And Undertaker wanted to do it, one, because he had never worked with Goldberg before one-on-one. But also, he wanted to erase the stink of the Crown Jewel match, where it was Undertaker and Kane against DX, which had happened the previous fall at Crown Jewel. He said, I wanted to redeem myself after the Crown Jewel match. Welp, didn't quite work out the way that the Undertaker had hoped that it would work out. And just to sum it up, here's the thing about that match. The match was fine. It was fine. Wasn't great. It was fine. Up until the point that Goldberg got hurt. When Goldberg ran himself headfirst into the post, he came up lame and he was bleeding. And the belief is that he was concussed. That's when everything just fell apart. It all went downhill from there. Goldberg got Undertaker up for a jackhammer. He fell backwards. He dropped Undertaker right on the back of his neck. If Undertaker didn't tuck his chin, he might have fell straight down on top of his head. And in his own words, it would have been catastrophic. It would have been catastrophic. That's how close we came to having the Undertaker paralyzed or permanently injured in Saudi Arabia. As it was, he got hurt. He, you know, jacked up his back really badly on that bump. You know, even when he came back the next month for that tag team match at Extreme Rules, he said he wasn't, like, physically, he should not have done that match. Physically, he was hurt. You know, his back was all screwed up. And he was still feeling the effects of that match. But he could have broken his neck. Everybody who saw it was scared. His wife was watching it. How bad is the damage? She knew something was wrong. That was a scary, scary moment. And then there was a spot where Undertaker, I assume they were going to do the Tombstone reversal spot where he picks up Undertaker, falls back. Undertaker maybe then tombstones him, gets the win. Goldberg fell down. I mean, the guy's got blood all over him. He probably doesn't even know where he is. He fell down. Undertaker fell on his ass. The whole thing was just, it was embarrassing. I felt badly for both guys in that moment. You know they didn't go into the ring that night wanting that performance. And you watch that. It's like when Undertaker tried to do the same thing with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, 17. In 2017. They tried to do the same thing. They were going to do it, looked like one of those tombstone reversal spots. And Undertaker, he's trying. He's trying to get up. He just can't. Can't do it. It's embarrassing. I hate seeing him like that, but you gotta just call it what it is. It's when you see things like that happen, you can't not think. Clearly, he stayed too long. And that's the one thing Undertaker consistently in this special tells us that he doesn't want to be. He doesn't want to be the guy that people look at and go, oh man, you should have seen him back when. And Undertaker says, I don't want to be that guy. Well, I got some news for you. Undertaker's already that guy. Doesn't mean I don't respect his work. I'm not trying to crap on the guy. I'm just being honest. That's the thing. It's kind of the secret that nobody has told him is that you've already become that guy. You hate to see it. But he's already become that guy. Undertaker gave Goldberg the second worst looking chokeslam I've ever seen, second only to the chokeslam he gave Hulk Hogan in their match at Judgment Day in 2002 that Hogan barely went up for, and mercifully put Goldberg out of his misery. And as soon as the match was over and the Undertaker sat up in that ring, his face, the look on his face, the look of sheer disgust on his face, they say a picture can tell 1,000 words, you can look at that image and you can tell 10,000. He was pissed. And he was not happy. He was not happy with that match at all. You know, here's a guy who rarely shows emotion like that during a match or when a match is over. And he couldn't not do it. Looked completely just revolted with what had just went down. And so much for the redemption that he was looking for. But, you know, going back and watching it again now, having Undertaker's perspective from this documentary, and how he was hoping to redeem himself after the last shitty match in Saudi Arabia, I felt bad for the guy. I felt bad for the guy. You know, I felt bad for him because he clearly wanted to make people forget about that Crown Jewel match. And You know, instead, this was his second straight embarrassment. And look, The Undertaker is a proud man. He's a proud man, and to have two straight embarrassing matches like that it's a tough pill to swallow. So I do. I feel bad for him. He did get some redemption in Philadelphia the next month at Extreme Rules. It was him and Roman Reigns, the Graveyard Dogs. They even had a t-shirt made that said Graveyard Dogs for their one time they teamed up, taking on Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre. One funny moment they show here in the documentary before the match, they're backstage, and he's talking to AJ Styles in catering, and some woman comes up to them, and I don't know, they didn't identify who she was, but the lady comes up to them and says, you know, you two guys are the only guys who work here who drink that Diet Dr. Pepper shit. And AJ goes, he looks at The Undertaker, he goes, no, DDP. Diet Dr. Pepper. He said that's short for you know, DDP is short for Diet Dr. Pepper. But Undertaker, at first, he didn't know what he meant. So all he heard was DDP. And there was like a delay of a second or two. And then he looks over at AJ. He goes, wait, what? He goes, don't say that. He was like, if you know the history there and the rumors of, you know, with him and Diamond Dallas Page from when they worked together back in 2001, there's always been talk that Undertaker is not a DDP fan. I won't get into all the stories again. I've already talked about it before, but those stories have been around for a long time. And it's funny, like, when I hear some people say, oh, Undertaker should do DDP yoga. And by the way, I co-sign that. I actually think for all of his injuries and stuff, that if he did something like DDP yoga, it probably would help him out a lot. I mean, everyone's body is different, but I actually do think he is somebody who probably would feel a little bit better and benefit from doing something like that. But I can just imagine his reaction if anybody ever walked up to him and suggested it. Like, oh, hey, Taker, you know, you should do DDP yoga, man. I'll put you in touch with Dallas. We'll get you started on the program. He probably flashed them that disgusted look from the Goldberg match in Saudi Arabia. It's the feud that single-handedly buried DDP 6 feet under and pretty much killed his career in WWE. So we got a part of the documentary where Triple H and Batista and Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin, they're all chiming in on how difficult it is to walk away. How difficult it is to know when enough is enough and you've reached the end. And every time they show Batista, to just show you, I'm not picking on The Undertaker or trying to be mean about the guy, but Batista, every time we hear from Batista in this documentary, he's talking about The Undertaker like he thinks the guy is going to just die in the ring. He's so concerned about him. I wish he would stop. I wish he would walk away. Because he cares about him, you know? He considers him a friend. He had one of his best matches in WWE with The Undertaker back at WrestleMania 23. Actually, I think the match they had at probably Cyber Sunday, it was the match where Steve Austin was the guest referee. I actually think that might have been better than the WrestleMania match. It's been a while since I've gone back and watched it, but the two of them work together, and you know, Batista has a tremendous amount of respect for him. He cares about him. He's concerned. And he wishes he would just leave it alone and just walk away. And Shawn Michaels says, it's an addiction. Any addiction is bad. Any addiction is bad, even if it's the healthy stuff. To be addicted is never a good thing. And there was a bit of a revelation here in this special now with Shawn Michaels. But before I get to that, Steve Austin. They showed footage of Steve Austin retiring at WrestleMania 19. And there's footage from backstage at Safeco Field that night. Undertaker is being interviewed. And it's interesting to hear him in that situation talking about Austin, knowing that was Austin's last match. And he says, you know, everyone's number gets called. The business is going to go on even after Steve Austin, but everybody's number gets called at some point. And that was 2003. And here we are almost 20 years later. And Undertaker is in this vicious cycle where he just doesn't know when to quit. It's never enough, right? He has a bad match. I've got to come back and have a good match. He has a good match. Well, then I can have a great match. And it's just this never-ending vicious cycle. So hearing him talk about Austin in that way back then, and now here he is kind of fascinating to watch. But the revelation here is that he goes, I haven't talked to Stone Cold about this, but I have had many conversations with Shawn Michaels. And he says that he told Shawn Michaels, he admitted to Shawn Michaels, he goes, I should have left with you. He should have retired with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 26, like a double retirement. And that's the first time I've heard him admit that. And I personally like the drama better of only Shawn's career being on the line. And I love that whole story going into WrestleMania 26 and the music video, you know, the video package leading up to it. Shawn just being obsessed even a year later. I know I can beat you. I want you again at WrestleMania. I know I can beat you. And then, well, if you're not going to give me a title match because Undertaker said no, he goes, well, I guess I'm going to have to go win the Royal Rumble. And all of a sudden, it created this great story going into the Royal Rumble where you kind of wanted to see Shawn win. And then he didn't. And he cost The Undertaker the championship at the Elimination Chamber. That pissed off The Undertaker. That led to the match. Like, I love that whole story. As much as I love the WrestleMania 25 match, which I think is better, the best story was the one going into the rematch. And here's Undertaker saying, I should have left with you. But, you know, I like the fact that it was only Shawn, because it kind of created this drama that it wouldn't have been the same if you knew both guys were leaving. But yeah, I mean, look, a double retirement match, two of the biggest stars in the history of the business at WrestleMania in front of 75,000 people would have been huge. Would have been a gigantic match. I mean, that's what I pitched that they should do with Undertaker and Sting at WrestleMania 31, do a double retirement match. Undertaker had that horrible match with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 30. He was concussed for most of it. He doesn't even remember it. Ended the streak, which never should have happened. So he gets to come back 1 year later, and he gets to finish his career off the right way. But you create this intrigue, right? Sting is coming in for his one and only WWE match. And you think to yourself, well, surely they're not going to have Sting lose, right? It's his one WWE match. He can't lose. If you know going in that it's going to be his last match too, you're thinking, oh, well, Sting can't lose his last match. And then with The Undertaker, you're thinking, well, he already lost to Brock Lesnar. Yeah, there's no streak, but surely they're not going to have The Undertaker lose 2 years in a row. They're not going to have The Undertaker lose his last match. And now you've created some doubt. You've created some intrigue about the finish. This is it for both guys. Who goes over? Now, of course, Undertaker goes over in that scenario. He's got to. But that's why I pitched the idea at the time. I just thought, man, you want an attraction for WrestleMania. There it is. There it is. I mean, Undertaker's the only match Sting ever wanted anyway. He only had to do the one match. And then he wouldn't have gotten hurt against Seth Rollins. But anyway, that's a whole other story. We've seen double turns before. We've seen double turns. I don't know that I've seen a double retirement. Would have been a hell of an attraction. So they have the match at Extreme Rules. Undertaker looked good. It was the best possible match for him. Tag team match. He doesn't have to do all the work. He could stand on the apron. He can smack the turnbuckle. He can get the crowd into it. Make the hot tag come in. Hit a few spots. Take a couple of bumps. Best scenario for him. To put him in a tag team match. So he looked good. He got his redemption coming out of Saudi. And yet we see him backstage with Vince McMahon right after the match. And we overhear a conversation between the two of them where Undertaker is telling Vince McMahon, I'm done. Because I'm done. It's not there anymore. And Vince says, okay, we can talk about it. It's like, this guy's not listening. It's going in one ear and out the other. Undertaker's trying to tell him, I'm done. Vince is like, we'll talk. We'll settle down. We'll have a conversation. And Undertaker is like, look, he goes, it's just not there. And Vince McMahon says, well, it sure looked like it was there tonight. You look great. Undertaker says, yeah, but the timing was there. Everything was there. He says, my body's not there. Because my body is not there, and it's my body and my long term that I got to be worried about. And he goes, I didn't want to just spring it on you, so I wanted to tell you now, even though it kind of is like I'm springing it on you, but I just wanted to tell you face to face. And Vince McMahon says, you know, Mark, I'll follow your lead. He says, I'll follow your lead. And Undertaker is going to go off and he's going to evaluate things. So as of Extreme Rules last year, what we learned here is that Undertaker considered himself very likely retired. As of July of 2019, Undertaker was fairly certain that He was done. But he also considered himself retired after the WrestleMania match with Roman Reigns, and we all know how that turned out. Every time he thinks he's out, he gets pulled back in. But you can't just put that on Vince McMahon. You can't just put that on external forces, right? Yeah, they pull him back in, but he's not resisting. Like, if you were being pulled into a pit of hot lava, right? You'd be scratching and clawing. You wouldn't want to go into that pit of hot lava. You would be scrambling for your life to not go in. I feel like they're dragging him in, and he's just kind of like putting his hands behind his back. He's like, all right, just, you know, go ahead and drag me back. I'm not going to put up a fight. Because he loves it too much. He's not ready to let it go. He keeps talking like he is. He's saying all the right things in this documentary. He realizes that, you know, I'm beat up. I'm fit, you know, physically, I'm just not there anymore. And I realize my time has come. Like, he's saying all the right things. Like, his mouth is saying all the right things. His brain is telling him something completely different. It's the battle between his brain and his mouth. That's maybe the biggest story of this documentary. Or the battle between his brain and his heart. Two very conflicting messages going on here. He just doesn't know when to quit. And the episode ends with him grabbing AJ Styles backstage at Extreme Rules. He wants to go off and have a conversation with him. He tells the camera crew to hang back so we don't get to eavesdrop on the conversation. Or maybe they're saving that for episode 5. We didn't get to see it here. That's where it cuts off. He clearly had his eye on AJ for a while. He made comments earlier about how AJ's the closest thing that we've got now to Shawn Michaels. Man, I wish I would have been able to work with him. It's kind of cool that they planted those seeds earlier, going back all the way to 2018 in the documentary. And spoiler alert, he did get to work with AJ after all. It just wasn't in the ring. It was in a cemetery on a closed set. It wasn't in a wrestling ring. But they did get to work together, and they had what was, in my opinion, the best match of WrestleMania this year. I mean, but then again, can you call it a match? I don't know. I don't know if you would really call that a match. It was more of a fight scene. More than a match, it was a fight scene. But it was the best fight scene that I've seen in WWE. The question is that going to be the last fight that we see The Undertaker in? That's the question that's left as we now go into the final episode of the series. Is he getting ready in this finale to announce his retirement for real this time? Are we going to get the retirement announcement next week from The Undertaker? That's been the question since this whole series started. Well, not if Shane McMahon has his way. Shane McMahon was the guest this week on Postmortem, which is the post show they have after each one of these. And he talked about the match he had with Undertaker at WrestleMania 32, right? Hell in a Cell. And even the Extreme Rules match, they worked together again in a tag team match. And Shane McMahon, this fucker, goes on this show when Undertaker is in the middle of trying to figure out if he wants to just, like, call it quits. And just to stoke the fire a little bit more, he is Vince's son. He goes on this post-mortem show and he issues a challenge to the Undertaker. They didn't show it here. This is on YouTube. But he says, I got a challenge I'm throwing out right now to the Undertaker. One more time, you and me, Hell in a Cell. So Shane McMahon, unless he was just joking, has now challenged The Undertaker to a Hell in a Cell match. I'm going to say no thank you. I'm going to take a hard pass on that. Been there, done that. You guys wrestled Hell in a Cell at Texas Stadium in front of 100,000 people at a WrestleMania. You can't get any bigger than that. You had the match, you lost, move on. We don't need to see that again. We don't need to see that again. If Undertaker is going to have another match, it does not need to be against Shane McMahon. I don't know what he's going to do. I can't get in the guy's head. I don't know what he's going to do. You know, I listen to him and I watch him struggling with this throughout the entire series, and I find it very hard to believe he's just going to go away quietly. He's going to make a little announcement on the show. I'm done. I'm retired. Surprise! I'm retired. I don't see it. I don't see it. He can't help himself. He can't help himself. He's going to want to go out in front of a live audience. You know, he's going to want to go out in front of a crowd of people and not a graveyard on a closed set. And maybe it's in the ring against AJ. Maybe he'll get his match with AJ after all. Maybe it's against someone like an Aleister Black, who I've suggested that if he is going to wait until Survivor Series, right, 30 years since he made his debut, What better place for him to have one last match if he's going to wrestle again? Which I don't think he has to, but if he does, do it at Survivor Series. And why not, if you want to go with somebody who could get the rub, why not someone like an Aleister Black? Keep building up Aleister Black, and maybe he would be a good, you know, person from the current roster, if not AJ, for him to get into the ring with. But I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know what he's going to do. Do I think The Undertaker has wrestled his last match? No, I don't. The man is an addict. The man is an addict. And when you're an addict for something, it's tough to kick the habit. Subscribe, hit that thumbs up. We got one left. We got one more left. The Last Ride, Chapter 5, drops on the WWE Network next Sunday, and I will have my review of the finale right back here next Tuesday. That's June 23rd at 8 p.m. Eastern here on YouTube. I do hope you'll join me then. Will he or won't he? I don't know, but I'll see you guys next week. Take care, guys.